Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Two Nordics podcast. I'm your host, James, and I'm joined, as always, by my good friend, Timmy Lang.
Hi, everyone.
Happy New Year to everybody. And this is the final Two Nordics podcast. And time is right for two of us, I think, to move on. And, I suppose we'll go over why we want to move on and maybe some of the highlights over the last 3.5 years. And then we'll thank a few people and organisations that supported us. But, Larry, Tim?
Yeah, it's a fucking emotional day, really, you know, but I suppose myself and James had to really look at our lives and look at what was important. And, you know, I suppose things like this, everything has to come to an end in some way. And I suppose now is probably the best time as ever kind of to move on. We both looked at what we've done in the last few years And I don't think there's anything that we could have really changed to make anything better. But I suppose I'm actually happy to know that the amount of work and the amount that we've gave back to our communities and to people that we know over the last few years has really helped us to kind of help us on our own paths, knowing that we're actually after doing some good within our communities. Yeah. Whereas 10, 12 years ago, we were an absolute fucking nuisance. Yeah.
Well, I think if you Google Timmy Lang or James Leonard, no, all you'll get is positive stuff.
Yeah.
Whereas a few years ago, I wasn't like that.
Yeah.
So that's probably a good legacy to have. The videos will always be on YouTube. The podcast will always be available on Spotify and Apple and all the others. So I know it'll help people for a long time after we finished. And you never know what'll happen in the future. But for now, anyway, it's the time is right, and there's always a good sign in business or in life knowing when to get out.
Yeah.
And I think for myself, last year I went to Timmy and the management agency we were at the time, and I was burnt out even at that stage. I wanted to leave, and I ended up, after a few days I came back, I said, look, I'll stay. I said I'd give it a year. But we did a podcast there a few months ago with an Australian lady psychologist, Hannah Coulter, and she came off to me afterwards. She says, James, you're showing a lot of signs of burnout. And it was like, fucking, no shit, Sherlock, you know. But it's just become unmanageable. Do you know, I suppose you can be a victim of your own success. Do you know, the more popular we got, the bigger we got, it just became harder to do. And if you look at the podcast and you see me and Timmy talking to guests and having a laugh and getting awards here and there and having brilliant experiences, which we did, but what you don't see is the hours of work that goes in the background. And there was a significant change in my personal circumstances as well, which means I can't give the podcast the time that I used to be able to give it. And as well, I suppose you have to look at your long-term future. Like, we're doing this 3.5 years, and you know, I have a mortgage, and I'm looking at my long-term career. I want to go back to work, back to a bit of stable employment. Like, being a self-employed creator, anyone will tell you, whether you're a comedian or a YouTuber or anything like that, like, it's precarious employment, you know. It's up to you to bring in the grants and the funding and stuff like that. So it's just a lot of pressure on top of everything else. So looking forward now, 2024, get back into work, back around my family, in a better headspace, back around my friends, back doing things I used to enjoy that I wasn't able to do for the last while. And yeah, just really focusing on what I want to do in life and what interests me and fun. I remember, like, back in the day, fun was easy. we'll always have fun. But I think when you become an adult and you have families and you have bills and jobs and stuff like that, you have to actually plan fun. You have to go out of your way to make it happen. So like over the Christmas, you know, I was at the pantomime. I was at a comedy club gig last night. I was at the kneecap gig in the city hall. And I don't know, I was just having a good fun. Stuff that I haven't been doing for the last while. But that's all very important, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely. And I suppose one of the big things for me was just missing, you know, going home after your 9-to-5 job and just having nothing to do. You know, maybe take the kids to training or go training myself in the gym instead of having to squeeze training in throughout my day and not knowing when I'd actually even get a chance to go to the gym and just squeeze it in at a timeline that is just available out of the blue. And it'd be nice just to be able to have some structure to my life a little bit. You know, and just, I always, in the last year or so, I longed for that back. just to be able to go home and have nothing to do, you know. And things, and like relate to James with the burnout, because for a while it just felt like, it's just doing things just felt like stress and anxiety, and I wasn't enjoying it. You know, don't get me wrong, I love the podcast, you know. I absolutely love the podcast, and I will continue doing a podcast myself. You know, I will continue doing my own thing around maybe neurodiversity, around learning differences and stuff, and some of the mental health stuff and addiction as well. And because I enjoy talking like about this kind of stuff, and I enjoy people. I enjoy sitting across this table or any table and just being able to relate to people and just to be able to join them on their journey. Because when somebody's sitting across that table from you, they're reliving their journey. You know, and just to be there for them at that moment in time so they can express themselves and know that there's somebody sitting across the table from them or somebody's, and they're completely non-judgmental and able to relate. It's a powerful thing for somebody to give you that trust. And I can honestly say, and I mean this truthfully, we've had over 180 guests, I think, between the prisons and this studio here. And there's probably one or two just come to mind that maybe were difficult for me to sit through. But the other ones, like, I genuinely felt every single moment of those podcasts, you know, and the people that were there, you know, and like the few that I didn't enjoy really sitting there with, they were just probably different. They weren't my thing. Mm. You know what I mean?
Could be different interests. Yeah, like, so
they just weren't my thing.
Some of the guests be up your street, some of the guests be up my street.
Yeah.
But what we tried to do was try to get a good mix of people that would appeal to everybody. And we touched on some obscure topics like stammers, and we had somebody on that was deaf.
That was powerful.
Like we did things that you wouldn't, there was not a podcast doing that.
Powerful,
try to be as inclusive as possible.
Yeah, because like we were sitting at a table here. I just remember we were sitting at the table. You had John, who's deaf, a deaf person, across from us, three of us at the table. Then you had another lady to James's left. She was doing the sign for John. And John then was signing back to us, and there was another lady vocalising the sign language from him back to us. And like we all had to be very tuned into just listening and knowing when our time, our opportunity was to have a question for John or say something. And it was like patience. And when you're doing that, like we wouldn't have been used to it, because our questions would have been just, and normally we would have just had our questions over here, yeah, and this, and you'd carry on. But like, it was a great opportunity for me anyway to be able to sit there and just watch myself and watch the urge to say something, and having that awareness to just pull myself back and just leave everybody do their role. And when the time came then, either for me or James to ask another question, You know, that kind of stuff is powerful. Like, and I never thought I'd ever experience something like that.
Yeah. No, the best thing about it is sitting across the table and talking and trusting people. You know what I mean? That's like, if that's all it took, it would never stop, you know? But it's way more than that. And you know, for anybody that wants to start out a podcast, I'd encourage you to go and do it, because you'll have brilliant experiences. And but you know, there is more to it than what you might see or hear. That's all I'd say. And if anybody ever wanted tips on how to start the podcast or where to start, you know, I'm very open to taking an email off somebody and giving them some guidelines. But as Timmy said, it's not the last you're going to see of Timmy. And I'd probably do something at home myself down the line, some smaller scale. That'd be up in your attic, you know. It won't be half as big, but it'd be more manageable, you know, something that as a hobby. Because when it was a hobby, it was grand. When it becomes a job, it's a different dynamic, and it takes the kind of enjoyment out of it for me. But and the funny thing is, you know, we were looking at the statistics yesterday for our 2023 statistics, and we had 1.2 million downloads in 2023. That's 100,000 a month. We did a podcast a week. There's 25,000 downloads per podcast, which is, you know, the podcast is there's a lot, there's thousands of people accessing it on a weekly basis. So it's not that the podcast is dying of death. That's not the reason. I just want to say to all those listeners, thanks for supporting us. And I suppose we'll go through some of the highlights, and then we'll go around and we'll thank people towards the end, Timmy.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
So what's some of your highlights, Tim?
From the beginning, I suppose, just on a personal level, my growth, you know, just highlighting that and how I felt from the first podcast to even sitting there now and not feeling the same anxiety and fear, you know. And I suppose anybody that listened to the first one and is listening to this now, you can't really hear that fear in my voice. You know, and that's a big step for me. It's really helped me to grow. And it's also helped me to grow as a human being, you know. From the last 3.5 years, I've got thicker skin. And when I say thicker skin, I mean just from some of the times that we would have got some negative feedback because of our past, because of the things that we would have done in our past. At the start, I would have took it on board and internalized some of the comments from people, you know, and would have went into my shell a little bit, and I would have felt a little bit overwhelmed with it, and maybe a little bit insecure about what I was doing. But I still knew from day one what I was doing was something that I was supposed to do. And just from where I have came from there at those moments to where I am now, my skin has thickened. You know, if somebody has something to say now, they're very entitled to say whatever they have to say. And I have absolutely no issue with it, because everybody's entitled to their own opinion, whether it's right or wrong, you know, whether I agree with them or don't agree with them, you know. That's absolutely fine, you know. It's absolutely none of my business what anybody else thinks of me or thinks of James or thinks of anybody sitting in this room here today, you know. And it's just about moving on. But you have to be in a certain place in your life for that, you know. If you're somebody that's really caught up in themselves and living in a low mood state of being, you know, negativity always in your head, always kind of caught up in the self-chatter on the head or the self-chatter in the room with others who are kind of caught up in the gossip and shit like that, it can be a difficult place to be in. But if you can just sit with the way you're feeling and just allow people to do and say whatever they need to say, it just changes. And that's what happened for me. It changed over time. It didn't happen initially. It gradually changed after the second time and the third and the fourth and the fifth. And then it just came to say, sure, how bad? So what? Like, everybody's entitled to what they want to say, you know. And that was a highlight for me on a personal level, just from getting from one state of being back to the first two podcasts I'd done, part one and two, to where I am today, you know. And I also also we have to understand as well, maybe some of the people that had negative things to say about me or James, maybe they've had something really bad happen to them in their lives and they're caught up in the pain of that. And that's fair enough to them. We have to understand that as well. You know, they're caught up in the in that pain and that's okay. You know, and that's okay. And what about you, James?
Yeah, I think, I suppose from day one, I really threw myself into the podcast in terms of like, what does it take to be a podcaster? The technical side of it, the editing and social media, sourcing guests and researching, you know, I learned a lot. Like if you have Gabor Mate or Bessel van der Kolk on the podcast, you make sure you're reading their books beforehand. So I learned a lot. Even like, you have a Palestinian lady and you have to make sure that you know your shit before, because you know you get found out. So that pressure of having to be on top of things, I enjoy that because I learned a lot of forces. You have to do research and force you to learn. I suppose the highlight for me definitely was having Christy Moore here in the studio next to us singing.
I don't think of Gert Togart. I think of my own father's home place.
Lovely.
All the fields and the haggard and the hay shed and the bog and, you know, so John is beautiful.
He is, yeah.
When did you get the idea to, so you wrote a song about your connection to Cork and why you like Cork, or when did the idea for that song come?
Myself and Mick were driving down, like, I've played the Marquee every year since it started, I think 17 years. And we're driving down this year. I said, "Jeez, Mick, it'd be great to write an old song about the Marquee." And I started writing it on the way down. And I thought I'd do it that night, but I did it at the sound check and it was terrible.
So you wrote it within the car driving the
I
way
started,
down?
I started it.
Oh, yeah.
And then when I was doing the gig in the Opera House for Don and the Cork Life Centre,
yeah.
I said, "Jeez, I'll have to have a go at this song." Yeah. So I spent a few weeks at it and I did it that night and I haven't done it since, but I've been working on it. Yeah. That night was great. Yeah,
want to give it a blast now?
Yeah, it was through your podcast that I met Don. You know?
Yeah, actually, do you want to tell us the story? Sing the song first and we'll tell the Don story afterwards, the Portlaoise connection.
Saturday night, packed in ties, all together in the big Marquee. The Cork Examiner says to me, "Why do you keep coming back year after year?" The answer's plain and simple, Mick. The reason's very clear. It's the reels in Ring of Skiddy and the jigs in Haulbowline. Ricky Lynch in the corner house, he's like a vintage wine. Oh, come on, Christy. Smarten up there. He's like a vintage wine. It's the cracking shark in Ireland and the hake in Union Hall and the turbot caught upon Cape Clear. You can eat the bones and all. On the banks, the beautiful banks on the banks of the River Lee. Saturday night we're packed in ties all together in the big Marquee. Puccini's in the Opera House, Karl Marx in the Conley Hall, Joe Max in the Arcadia, the two Norries are on the ball. Maggie Barry's on the call, Kid Jimmy Crowley's on the rantantan, sound as a bell, Hank Waddell and the maestro John Spillane. Here's Katrina Toomey, she's coming up the mall to cook the penny dinner, to feed the great and small. And there goes Don O'Leary on the road to Sunday's Well, up to the Cork Life Centre for to ring the morning bell. On the banks, the beautiful banks, on the banks of the River Lee. Saturday night we're packed in ties all together on the big Marquee. I took a wrong turn at Dunkettle, upon my soul, down the Jack Lynch Tunnel, woke up in the Metropole, and all along McCurtain Street till I came to Patrick's Hill. Big Noel said, "Keep coming back, and by God, I surely will." Back to the English Market, back to that scene, where a well-known Cork fishmonger met Her Majesty the Queen. He brought the cockles and the mussels, caviar and lobster tail. The periwinkle drove the poor old queen completely off the rails. On the banks, the beautiful banks, and the banks of the River Lee. Saturday night we're packed and tight all together in the big marquee. The lonely woods of Upton, the boys of Fair Hill, the piper of Crossbarry, I hear him still. I see the blood and bandage when I hear the rebels sing. I'm going to kiss that Blarney stone when the bells of Shandon ring. On the banks, the beautiful banks, on the banks of the River Lee. Saturday night we're packed in times all together on the big marquee.
Very good, very good.
That was like a surreal moment, you know, somebody that you've grown up listening to, that's a huge part of Irish culture, and to have him here singing was brilliant. The opera houses were amazing as well, especially the first one. What else was there? The Late Late Show was pretty cool as well. Ryan Tuberty, I know he gets a lot of shit, like, but he was very nice to us.
Yeah.
And he was. The Nationwide documentary was very good, wasn't it?
Yeah, that was powerful as well. That came across really well. And just to have our families as well in it. And to give...
On our area.
Yeah.
Erpulin and Nannini and Holly Hill was... Yeah. No, it was lovely,
and to be a and to be the area to be seen in a nice way was powerful as well, because from the moment I can remember back in the day, like Knocknaney, Holly Hill, Granbrough areas, and Churchfield, they would have been known as areas of criminality and violence and drugs and stuff like that, but. Just to see the good, genuine people that do live in the areas. Like 90, when I say this now, it's not me just saying it, but 99.9% of fucking people up there are just getting on with their lives. And the odd old few people that are just up there messing about and doing their thing. They're doing that because they actually don't know any better, you know? And that's probably just all they've ever seen in their lives, you know? And but... As a society, you know, who actually don't understand the people and where they're coming from, we can be a small bit, maybe, what's the right word?
Judgmental.
Judgmental. Yeah, a little bit judgmental on people without understanding the context of how they grew up and the nature of the environment that they were brought up in, and the people that influenced them. You know, we really genuinely don't understand that side of it. We're very quick to judge people in relation to the things that they do. And I'm not, and I've always said this before, I'm not justifying anybody's actions. You know, it's not about that, but all I'm trying to say is sometimes we just have to be a little bit more considerate in relation to just understanding where people are coming from and what they've actually experienced in their lives for them to actually turn out the way they did. That's very important.
It is, and it's a big reason why we wanted to have politicians on the podcast, because we're not political people. We're not a political podcast. We've had representation from Sinn Féin, Fine Gael, Fianna Fáil on the podcast. And but the reason we had the Taoiseach Micheál Martin on, Minister for Justice Helen McEntee, Minister for Finance Michael McGrath, is because when you want to advocate for something, or you want to bring around change, you can either choose to go on Twitter and complain about it, or you can choose to have a seat at the table with the people that can actually make the changes. And we chose to sit at the table with sitting ministers and Taoiseachs that can actually make change. And we took a lot of flack for that, for people don't like politicians, and I understand a lot of the reasons why not. But for me and Timmy, it was a brilliant opportunity for us to show the ministers and the Taoiseachs that people like me and Timmy aren't a write-off, and there's a lot of hope, there's a lot of value in allowing people to turn their lives around and support people that want a better life. And just to show them that it's not black and white, that people are in prison are all bad and the people outside of prison are all good. So we might never see the fruits of that advocacy work, But I'm sure Helen McEntee, Michael McGrann, Micheál Martin left the studio with a different view on people like Mean to Me. Mm. And that was all we wanted. And we were prepared to take the flak that came with that to get our goal. You know, so yeah. That was the reason, wasn't it?
Yeah, and not just that, really. There was a lot of people whose perceptions of people on the streets, you know, homeless people there have drug addiction problems and alcoholism problems and maybe and mental health, which is the big thing for me as well, which is something I've learned a lot of in the last few years is the correlation between mental health and addiction and how both of them are interconnected and how a lot of our treatment centres won't take people who have a dual diagnosis, a mental health issue with an addiction problem, which is absolutely ridiculous, if you ask me, because there's no one thing without the other. There's not a drug addiction problem on its own without a mental health issue and vice versa. You know, so I think it's very important that we start understanding how addiction works and where it stems from, and also looking into maybe the early intervention within in the lives of children. You know, start focusing a little bit more into what we can actually change within our schools and make schools a less stressful place for our kids, particularly kids with learning differences and different needs, different behavioural needs, etc. You know, I think it's very important that we change these things, you know, and by changing these things now in our schools and changing the way we've learned for the last, God knows how long, like the education system in this country is just, it has never changed. It's still the same. It still looks at every child needing to learn the same stuff, you know, and it's time to change. It's time to change. It's time to look at the education system in this country and see what we can change with it and see how children can get the educations that they need, because like teaching kids languages that they don't want to learn and teaching them mathematical questions and other stuff that is causing anxiety and stress from is wrong. It's absolutely wrong. You know, there's better ways to teach kids. You know, I look at my child, Jay, and when I was in school, I loved the practical stuff. I loved art. I loved woodwork and metalwork. And Jay's the same. Jay comes home and he said, Dad, I love woodwork, I love metalwork, I love doing technical graphics, you know. And then when it comes to French or anything else, it's the same love isn't there, you know, it's not there. And I'm not a parent to put pressure on my children around education, you know, because of my own understanding of it. I don't want to put education, like, it's important for them to have an education and to be able to read and write, but I don't want to be that parent who puts so much pressure on them that they get so stressed they can't actually retain information because they're in fight or flight. And we have to understand that as parents as well. And we just need to be educated around it, you know, educated around what's more important, our kids' well-being or their education. I know my kids' well-being is more important than their education, you know, and that's the truth. Because if their well-being is not well, God knows what's going to come from that. And remember what I said a while ago, the correlation between mental health and addiction, you know, that might answer your question, you know. So let's focus a little bit more on kids' well-being and their mental health than pushing education down their throats.
Yeah, I suppose we should thank some people and organisations. I suppose Patreon, really. The people that donate to us once a month for the last 3.5 years. There's about 200 of you there. When we had an arse to our pants, you know, he helped us buy the equipment that's in the studio. He helped us pay the rent on the studio. He helped us pay producers. And if we didn't have people on Patreon, we wouldn't have continued, I'd say, after 6 months, to be honest. So I want to say from the bottom of my heart, thanks to everybody on Patreon. And if you're listening to this and you're not supporting, let's say you have there's a creator you like that you consume their content, whatever it is. If there's an opportunity for you to support them on Patreon or another type of a platform for €2-3 or €5 a month, do it. Because you might think it's only a couple of euros, what's the point? But if you get 200-300 people to do it, it has a big impact on the person and their ability to do the work. So it was great to have so many people enjoy what we do so much that they felt compelled to give us €2-3 a month. Some gave us a fiver, some gave us 20. It was about 200 people there, so thank you to them. And the Irish Prison Service has helped us a lot over the last 12 months, especially. In the early days, Cork City Council gave us some grants. Social Entrepreneurs Ireland gave us a grant. Different philanthropists that don't want to be named, businessmen and entrepreneurs in Cork City, donated to us anonymously. That helped pay for everything in the studio as well. And it was brilliant, really, you know. Because of myself and Timmy's background, I don't think there was no sponsors really looking to come on board, and we were let down a few times that, you know, when things looked promising, but for every disappointment we had, somebody came in with an opportunity. So thank you to all of them, and thanks to my wife Gillian, I suppose, as well, who we had on the podcast 3 times, and she put up with a lot of shit for me over the last 3.5 years. Even when I was at home, I wasn't present, and so thanks to Gillian, and looking forward now to maybe doing something with her down the line. You never know. If she comes out of her shell and gets a bit more confident, she might. But as I said, we had her on 3 times, and she got a great response. And it's great to see women on the podcast that have come from difficult backgrounds, because we've had a lot of men on the podcast with similar stories to me and Timmy, but it's hard enough to get women to talk. So it was great to have Gillian on, and yeah, thanks to everybody as well who liked and subscribed and commented and encouraged us, people that sent us emails and DMs and all those people.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, and even in lockdown, thanks to Sharon for giving us her office below in Little Ireland. You know, Sharon.
Remember we got swabbed by Dr. Nick Flynn down there and everything.
Yeah, I remember coming home from Little Ireland one night and being stopped in the checkpoint by the guards, and the lads were you off then? And I was well outside my 5 kilometres now on this stage, and I just basically told him what I was doing, and he says, no hassle, go on, and just tell, if you get stopped anymore, just tell the other guards what you're doing, and yeah. And he said there'd be no issues from us, you know, and that was powerful as well, because the guards actually seen the importance of what we were actually trying to do at that time was when everybody was at home, you know, and there was no AA meetings, there was no NA meetings.
Common sense policing, that was, wasn't it?
It was, and it was good to see that as well, you know, because it was good to see the humanistic side of guards, where it's not all about authority,
yeah.
You know, and that was powerful as well, you know. And we've had a few guards on the podcast as well, and you know, they were good. They were
a lot of guards listen and email us and send us DMs and stuff like that.
You know?
They use it for their own professional development, so they have a better understanding as to the people they're actually interacting with on a daily basis.
Yeah, and just to go back to what James was saying about thanking family and stuff. I suppose I'll have to thank my wife as well, you know, for putting up with me. You know, just putting up with my shit, basically, and putting up with the lack of time, you know, that she should have got from me, where I was probably going to a prison or going up to Dublin doing a podcast or doing a talk, you know, or just being down here doing 2 or 3 podcasts in one night. You know, just thanking her for all the... all the stuff that she shouldn't have been doing, and I should have been doing all the collections and from trainings and all these different things, you know, and the kids, my kids, just thanking them really for understanding the stuff that we were doing here, the work that I was doing here, and understanding the importance of what I was doing, you know, and for all the questions that they've asked me about my life, and me then trying to answer the questions in the best way I could, so their little brains could understand what I was saying without really making it too difficult for them to understand, you know, particularly Jay, my young son, who really didn't understand too much about my background, you know, and just trying to explain it to him in the best way I possibly could, and show him that what I was in the past isn't something to be proud of, you know, but it's important as well to me where I did come from, because it's after moulding the person that I am today. I often explained it to him in a way that the reason is that I would tell him about my past is because I wanted to be honest and transparent with him, and for him to understand what is out there, you know, and also understand everybody doesn't have it easy, you know. My upbringing was completely different to the upbringing that he was getting off me and his mother. And just for him to be grateful, you know, for what he does have in life. And he understood it as that. And my kids are well tuned in because of that reason. And they ask me questions, and I always answer with the best possible honest answer that I can give them, you know, in a way that they'll understand. And just everybody that has worked with us, you know, all our producers, Rowan, you know, Brian O'Sullivan, you know, Sean, you know, Tony, who's with us there at the moment, who's fucking absolutely brilliant, and Katie, and Sandra, you know, all these people were a massive, massive part in the Two Norries podcast in the last few years, and they've been really, really helping myself and James. You know, I suppose if it wasn't for all those people, we would have crumbled, I'd say, many, many moons ago. You know, so we're very, very grateful to all them, and I hope they understand it. You know, and all the people out there that probably didn't get a reply and an email or an Instagram or a social media message, just for you to understand that it was never about me and James not caring about people or not wanting to reply. It was just that we got into such a state where it was actually a difficult thing actually turn on the social media messages and look at them, because we were absolutely burnt out.
Inundated. Like, there could be 50, 100 messages a day between the emails and the Instagram. We even closed the DMs on Facebook because there was too much, and it was just become unmanageable, and we were working and families and stuff like that. So it was just become, we tried to prioritize and we tried to reply to everybody. And if you didn't get a reply, it's nothing against you.
Yeah. That's all. And it's very hard to give an answer to somebody who has a family member that's destroyed from alcoholism or drugs or gambling. It's very hard, you know, because they'd ask how can they get them well, or what do they need to do, how can they help them, and the honest answer to that is you really can't do nothing. The only thing you can do is just be there for them when they actually do need help, because it will never work if you're the one that's threatening them into treatment or threatening them into going to a counsellor or going to the doctor. They have to genuinely want it for themselves. And the only time that's going to happen is if they're in so much pain and they've felt so awful with an addiction and hopeless and shameful. And it's those emotions are the things that want them to stop. You know, and that's what a rock bottom comes from. It comes from so much pain. And some people can take so much shit. And I often look back at my own life and I say, like, how didn't that experience stop me? Or how didn't this? Or why didn't I stop drinking years ago because of that or this or that? Because I needed more. More stuff had to happen to me, you know, because that wasn't enough. Losing my wife and kids wasn't enough. Being nearly killed in car crashes and or in fights, you know, wasn't enough. You know, walking around the streets with nowhere to go wasn't enough. You know, but all these different things added up into one, and they all had a part to play in my rock bottom. It wasn't just one thing. It was all of those things together, because all those emotions were packed into the last one, you know, knowing that nobody can put up with your shit anymore, and that it's the end of the road. And just knowing it internally that you cannot keep going the way you're going. That's what a rock bottom is. And that can only happen to the individual person who's suffering from the addiction. There's no human power on the planet can change that until they actually internally feel it themselves, and they know it's time to stop. And that's my kind of description of what it takes for somebody to stop on their tracks with an addiction. And sometimes that doesn't happen. And that's a very hard thing to say to a parent or a brother or a sister or a husband or a wife, is to tell them that, you know what, it might go the other way. And when I say the other way, a lot of people lose their lives to addiction, you know, and to mental health and suicide, you know, and there's nothing really anybody can do about that, you know. And the people that are left behind then suffer in silence with guilt and shame and regret that they could have done more. But the reality of it is, if you've somebody that's struggling with an addiction now in your life, try to make it up whatever arguments you've had and just be there for them when they need it. And I don't mean financially. I mean, if they just give them the time of day, say hello and tell them you love them and look beyond the shit that they have done, because it's the guilt of not talking or having somebody in your life a family member or a friend and something happening to them and they're passing or something like that. That's a difficult thing to live with, and I can relate to it through my own experiences. What do you think, James?
Yeah, absolutely. But I think with the body of work that we've done, there's a lot of information there for people affected by what you're talking about in terms of family members or even people that are in addiction at the moment and they feel that there's no hope. They'll hear somebody like myself, Timmy, or one of the guests we've had on. They can identify with them, relate with them, and then they can follow their pathway through recovery. And if that don't work, they can follow the next pathway through recovery or the next one, because there's loads of ways to better in your life. There's no one set way, and we try to highlight all the ways. I suppose the last thing I suppose we wanted to thank really is the guests, because without the guests it would have been, you know, the guests were vital, like, and it's not easy, like Timmy knows and I knows, I know, coming on, like we've been on the telly and we've been on different podcasts and radio stations and all that, and it's not easy being interviewed, especially if it's your first time or you're new to it. And it takes a lot of courage to talk about your personal life, especially when it might be checkered. And I want to thank the people that were brave enough to sit at the table with us and to share their experiences in the hope to help and inspire others. And that's what it was always all about. And that's what we'll hold on to when we finish up. So, Sinead, I'd say thank everybody for their time and for supporting us. And we'll see everybody in the future.
Thank you.
Sláinte.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Bowl and Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Bowl and Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bowlandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices.
Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.